just when you thought there was no hope for baby boomers. It's the Rational Boomer Podcast. Logic, common sense, compassion. Yeah, who knew? Now, here's Mike.
We are back on the Rational Boomer Podcast. Hopefully your day is going well. It is Thursday. A lot of shit happened yesterday. We've got a lot of stuff to talk about. Just a heads up, Ed will be on the show tomorrow, Saturday. And the next day, Sunday, I believe it's going to be Tammy Wilson. Now, this is going to be an interesting show, maybe a little out of the ordinary. Tammy Wilson is the Democratic candidate who's running against Jim Jordan in Ohio for the House seat. Now, the reason I'm ending up talking to her is you remember Abe was on the show, and he's kind of taken it upon himself to take Jim Jordan out, even though he doesn't live in Ohio. And he's been helping to promote Tammy Wilson, and he asked me if I would have her on the show. And I said, fuck yeah, that could be interesting. I need to find out more about the district where Jim Jordan keeps getting elected. And if I can help get a Democrat, Tammy Wilson, for example, elected, yeah, we'll do that. So I believe she's coming up Sunday. So we've got some good things planned for you. And a lot of stories from yesterday. I think the one that there's a number of them that we'll talk about, but I think the one that is the most interesting and not very surprising, but interesting is the situation with Donald Trump's bond. You maybe heard this story that Donald Trump posted the bond and then the state of New York rejected the filing. And it was because of paperwork. This company that was doing the bond didn't include their financial statement, which seems weird given this is all about fucking money. Question is, why would they not give their financial statement? Well, they reject this, send it back, and they have to correct it. So they did, and they provide their financial statement. And now we know what the deal is. They don't really have enough money on hand to put up a bond like this. There's something sketchy about this whole thing. And the fact that they're not even licensed to make loans in the state of New York. It's a weird, sketchy situation. And it's gone from all the excitement of Donald Trump making the bond and slipping out of another one to them making a minor mistake. And you assume they're just going to go back and fix it and we'll still get the bond. Unfortunately, this opened up a lot of Pandora's boxes because there's a lot of red flags out there that suggest this might not be a legit company or at least legit enough to do what they're trying to do here. So now there's all kinds of investigation into it. Letitia James is asking some hard questions, and there is going to be a hearing to try to determine whether or not this company can legitimately post a bond for Donald Trump. Now, I'd heard it was April 22nd. I don't know if that's true. We've got the Supreme Court hearing the immunity arguments on the 22nd. So I'm not sure what's going on here. But the fact of the matter is if they determine that Donald Trump, his bond isn't legit, he's in fucking deep trouble. He needs to find another company to post the bond. Now, you have to understand he was having trouble to get a bond in the first place, and these guys are obviously him scraping the bottom of the barrel. And it was exposed that they might not be really in a position to do this stuff. This seems so, so Donald Trump, a little bit sketchy, a little underhanded, and trying to slip one by. Well, this one's not slipping by. This one is a problem for Donald Trump, and we'll see what happens. Now, of course, we'll talk more about that later in the program. As always, we have a number of emails. Here's the first one. Dear Rational Boomer, I'm concerned about the ugly side of the America Trump has exposed. I feel like these people have always been there, but they stayed hidden for the most part. When Trump was elected, it's like he turned over a huge rock and all the creepy crawlies felt safe to come out and show their hatred. I agree with you 100%. That is exactly what happened. one way or another, we'll eventually be done with Trump. And how do we address the misogyny, the racism, the anti-Semitism, and alphabet soup of other hateful views he's brought into the open? I suspect and hope that it's the dying embers of white supremacy that we are witnessing as our nation moves towards a minority majority. I feel like Trump was an unforeseen slap in the face after 8 years of an exemplary administration under our first black president. I guess I just feel better with some reassurances that those embracing intolerance are simply a loud and fading minority of our population. It's been over 7 years of divisiveness, and I'm ready to embrace a brighter future. I'm a Gen Xer with no grandchildren as yet, but I'd like to think future generations will inherit a nation that's moving in a positive direction. Thanks for keeping many of us off the ledge. Tanya from Cleveland. Well, I'll tell you this, Tanya. I think that if we think we're going to deplete the racists, the misogynists, the anti-Semites, the fucking dirtbags in this country, we're fooling ourselves. You got to remember in the 60s and 70s, racism and all of this stuff was accepted, and there was a lot of them around. Time went by, and we had Martin Luther King, civil rights, women's rights, and all those things, and things seemed to get better. There wasn't as much open racism, misogyny, anti-Semitism, and all the rest. It wasn't out there and open. It wasn't something we were seeing. Because those folks, under the pressure of normal folks pushing back on this, crawled under the rocks. And then from that point up until, well, 2015, 2016, when Donald Trump came into the theater of politics, I think if you asked any white person, they'd say, yeah, I think white supremacy or racism has really gotten better. There's more people thinking properly. But I think if you talk to people of color, they'd say, yeah, not so much. See, the fact of the matter is there aren't less racist, misogynist, anti-Semite, dumb fuck pieces of shit. There aren't any less of them. But they didn't feel comfortable from coming out under their rocks, like you said, until Donald Trump made it cool to do so. I don't know that we can change people's minds any more than we can change Donald Trump fans to believe that Donald Trump is a piece of shit. The only thing we can kind of do is try to silence them, take them out of the narrative, and send them back under their rocks, and hopefully not put ourselves in a situation again. Will we make racism better? Well, we won't make it as public, but those people will still exist, and we have to pay attention to that and protect ourselves as a country and the people from these fucks. They're not going away. They didn't go away after the 60s and 70s. They're not going away now. These people are just obnoxious, stupid fucks. The hope that we have for the future are the millennials, the Gen Zs, and the younger kids. Hopefully in time, we will get a change of attitude in this country because of the young people. But as long as we have baby boomers, even some Gen Xers, they're going to have these attitudes. It's not till they're out of the mix, and hopefully the Gen X and millennials will have a different attitude. But even when Donald Trump is gone and the Republicans are gone, don't think racism is gone, because it won't be. It'll be there. It'll just be hidden. And the best we can hope for is to keep it under the rocks. Put another rock on top of it so they don't come out again. All right. Thank you, Tanya, for the email. The next email says, hi, Boomer. You and Soul discussed Aileen Cannon and what is motivating her. Here's my 2 cents worth. As much fun as it is to cast all Trumplafucks as idiots, we know that Aileen is not stupid. She graduated from the University of Michigan Law School and passed the bar, for Christ's sakes. I think she's trying to get thrown off the case because she's actually presiding over it to a conclusion and is a nightmare. She knows he's guilty, but she also knows that there's a big wide gap between being thrown off the case and actually being taken off the bench. So that's the space she's trying to navigate through. And if that's what you were trying to do, you'd pretty much do what she's doing, getting thrown off this case, but remain a judge and be forever hero to the stupid. We see that actual accountability at her level is rare and manageable. Look at Clarence Thomas and the shenanigans he's getting away with. And speaking of Clarence, I must respectfully disagree that he keeps Jenny in compliance. I really believe that she controls him in a profound way. I won't be provocative in this forum, but if anyone is driving compliance, it's her. Obviously pure conjecture on my part, but I think he's Jet and she's his Pookie. Best, Garage Door Jeff. You know, I tend to agree with you there. I think Grandma Thomas is the one in charge. She's the psychopath. Clarence is just a corrupt piece of shit. And Jenny, she's a fucking problem. She is a problem. I agree with you on that, Jeff. I think that's true. And as far as Aileen Cannon trying to get kicked off the case, that's an interesting take. I don't know that I agree with it, but I don't know that I can disagree with it either. She may have gotten in over her head. Well, she definitely did get in over her head, and maybe she's trying to get the fuck out of it. That would be the smart thing to do. But also what she's doing is kind of playing to Donald Trump. You know, she turned down his request to dismiss the case because of immunity. And that's fine. And that sounds like she went against Donald Trump, but it's how she worded it. She says, I don't think this is something we can decide at pretrial. So what that means is if they're deciding it now temporarily, but once the trial starts, she can go back and change that. That's a problem, because at that point, then Jack Smith can't do anything to appeal her. So it almost seems like she's setting this up to get into the case so she can dismiss it and let Donald Trump off. It's one of those two things. She's either trying to get kicked off, and I can see where you're coming from with that, or she is truly in the bag for Donald Trump and she's doing everything she can to get him off. All right. A Garage Door Jeff always has a P.S. He says, P.S. an emailer mentioned a backdoor Jeff. I've never heard of that name, and it ain't me. I'm familiar with a reoccurring character in older blues music known as the Backdoor Man, who apparently specialized in married men. That ain't me either, but it reminded me of the blues term Steady Rollin' Man, which made me think Steady Rollin' Boomer. I think I find broad agreement that you are indeed the Steady Rollin' Boomer. I'd like a T-shirt says that over the podcast sketch. Steady Rollin' Boomer. I know there's a dig in there. Something I don't get it. I don't understand it. You're gonna have to write another one, Jeff, and tell me where the zinger is there. Steady Rollin' Boomer. I mean, it sounds positive, but I know you, Jeff. I know you're giving me shit. I just want to know how. All right, the next one comes from Allison in Vegas. Hello, Boomer. I hear you speak confidently about Trump's April 15th trial in New York, and yes, there is no way he should escape 30 felony charges. I agree wholeheartedly. What has me concerned? First, one rogue juror to throw a wrench into those convictions, a mistrial, something of that sort. Please, Mike, take me off that ledge. Thank you very much, Allison in Vegas. Well, you know, that's always a potential problem. And that might be a problem in Georgia. That may be a problem in Florida. But remember, we're in New York. The likelihood of that happening is probably far less than in one of those other states. That said, there's a fair amount of peer pressure when you're in a situation like that. Plus, these people will be exposed to actual facts and actual evidence. There have been other occasions when Donald Trump had to face a jury, and surprisingly, they found against him, even though there were some Trumplafucks on the jury. That's a possibility, but again, I think you're just looking for something to worry about. You're waiting for the other shoe to drop, and you're trying to figure out what that's going to be. I don't think that's going to be a problem, and if you get a hung jury or a mistrial, that doesn't mean he gets off. It just means there's going to be another fucking trial. And just keep having trials until this motherfucker gets convicted. Because that's the goal here. Get his ass convicted. I understand your concern. I wouldn't worry about it too much. We haven't seen anything like that yet. It's a rarity, and it's in New York. So we've got a good situation there. If there was ever to be a time when that doesn't happen, it would be in the Manhattan District trial in New York. All right. Now, you know, there's a lot of progressive Democrats and young people screaming about Joe Biden. He's genocide Joe. He's backing Israel and they're killing people in Gaza. And I always found that strange because it seems to me that Joe Biden is doing all he can to try to placate the situation, to temper the situation. He has a problem in that we're an ally with Israel. So we do have to support Israel. But we understand that the guy who runs Israel, the leader, is basically a Donald Trump knockoff, a radical right warmongering piece of shit. And so therein lies the problem with what's going on in the Gaza Strip. He's making these innocent Gaza folks collateral damage, and he doesn't fucking care. He said as much. He doesn't care. So this is starting to irritate Joe Biden. I mean, it's not good for his campaign, and he's a compassionate guy. He doesn't want to see people starving and hurt and all those sorts of things. And he's been getting frustrated with Benjamin Netanyahu, the president of Israel. In fact, he was caught on a hot mic a while back, and he says, yeah, me and Netanyahu, we're going to have a come to Jesus meeting, which I think is hysterically funny because Jews and Jesus aren't a thing. Netanyahu doesn't even know what that fucking means. But anyway, Joe Biden got on the phone with Netanyahu yesterday, and he wasn't pulling any punches. On Thursday, he talked to Benjamin Netanyahu and called for an immediate ceasefire, which is exactly what the progressives have been telling Joe Biden to do. He says, I need immediate ceasefire. And that future U.S. support for the country's military offensive will depend on whether Israel takes concrete steps to protect civilians and humanitarian workers in the Palestinian enclave. Now, a lot of reporters asked, what does that mean? You're going to cut funding? You're not going to send them weapons? What? And nobody would answer that. I suspect when he said this to Benjamin Netanyahu, he gave him no specific threats. He wanted to see how he was going to react. If you don't do this, and if you aren't more careful and initiate a ceasefire, and let's help get help to the innocent folks involved in this thing, then you're going to get what for. He wasn't going to tell him exactly what he was going to do because that could change. It depends on the circumstances and what he might do. He was trying to find out whether Netanyahu would be fearful enough of America and Joe Biden of what they might do if he didn't react. So the question is how is he going to react? And a lot of people asked, how much time you giving him? And it was said that they would give him hours or days to announce what they were going to do and then actually execute what they're going to do. You can't just talk about this shit. You got to get it done. So it's going to be interesting to see how Israel reacts. Now, the president's comments are the first time he has threatened conditioning aid to the U.S.'s strongest ally in the Middle East during the last 6 months of the war. In a call with the prime minister, the first since March 18th, Biden said that the current humanitarian crisis in Gaza is unacceptable and that Israel must announce and implement measurable steps to address civilian harm, humanitarian suffering, and the safety of aid workers, according to a readout from the White House. He made clear that U.S. policy with respect to Gaza will be determined by our assessment of Israel's immediate action on these steps. Now, just after Biden's call, an Israeli official told Axios that the country's security cabinet has approved opening the Erez crossing in northern Gaza for the first time since October 7th in order to allow more humanitarian aid to enter the enclave. The cabinet also reportedly approved temporarily opening up the Ashdod port to the transport additional aid in Gaza and will increase the amount of humanitarian assistance coming from Jordan via the Kerem Shalom crossing. Now, the Times of Israel confirmed the moves, which is an admission by Israel that it was not previously doing everything in its power to allow life-saving aid in Gaza. Vice President Kamala Harris, Secretary of State Anthony Blinken, and National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan were also on the call, but did not participate. Harris said, "I was on the conversation between President Biden and Prime Minister Netanyahu, and the conversation was honest. The president made it clear that the U.S. will not leave Israel without the ability to defend itself. But if there is no change in their approach, there will be a change in our approach." This is interesting to hear. This is all the things that the progressive Democrats have been asking. But yet they're still kind of kicking about things. Well, no, I think you should do this, or no, you should. I think you should do this. The thing that people have to understand is Joe Biden is the president of the United States. He's not the prime minister of Israel. He only has so much control over what Israel does. And unfortunately, they have a prime minister who is basically a second-rate Donald Trump, radical right, warmonger, crazy, stupid motherfucker. What they really need to do is get Netanyahu out of there and get some reasonable mind as the leader of the country. And I know there's a lot of protest about it, too. Whether they can accomplish that or not, I'm not sure. Netanyahu is a corrupt motherfucker, and I'm sure he's covering his ass. So here we are. What's going to happen? Joe says, look, if you don't do something to take care of those people, those innocent people in Gaza, and have a ceasefire so we can get more hostages out, we're going to change our policy towards you. We can't abandon them completely because we are an ally. However, the threat of changing it or limiting things is a possibility, and they have to consider that, and we'll see if that's enough of a push to get them to do something. I'm sure Joe Biden and the Democrats are hoping it is, because then, if not, they're going to have to act, and they're going to have to do some things. And as much as Muslims and the people supporting Gaza are upset now, the Jewish folks will get upset if they start picking away at whatever support they're giving to Israel. See, this is a no-win situation. No matter which side you take, you're going to get your ass kicked by the other side. And again, for me, that's why it's a no-brainer, and I don't have a dog in this fight, because no matter what I say, I'm going to lose. And given that it's in another country and we have plenty of our own problems, I think I'm going to focus on them. Now, that said, I do support one side in the Israeli-Gaza conflict, and those are the innocent folks. We've got governments and wealthy people on the Israeli side, and we've got Hamas, a terrorist organization. They're fighting it out. These poor people in the middle are getting killed and devastated just because they're in the wrong place at the wrong time. And unfortunately, they got no place to go. So this is a fight amongst elites, I guess you would call it. And that's why it needs to stop. You guys want to fight it out in the middle of the Gaza Strip? Well, then let us get all the Gaza folks out to a safe place so you can destroy one another. If that's what you want to do, go for it. But to kill innocent people, that's a severe problem. And clearly, Joe Biden has acknowledged that. And now he's calling you out, Netanyahu. Either fucking do something or there's going to be some consequences. All right, we were talking about this bond issue with Donald Trump. All of a sudden, out of the blue, a couple days before the deadline, he comes up with a $170 million bond to save his ass, to put his case on an appeal, and put a stay on Letitia James seizing and liquidating his shit. Donnie did it again. He pulled out a win from the ashes. But then we're not all surprised, because it turns out that the guy who posted the bond is sketchy at best, didn't know what he was doing when he was posting the bond, and now he may not even be a legitimate company to post this bond. So this has turned into a very big mess. New York Attorney General Letitia James wants answers on how former President Donald Trump's bond in the civil fraud case is structured. And she's strategizing multiple avenues to get the information she needs, wrote legal expert Lisa Rubin on X. See, what they need to find out now is, what is the collateral? Is there anything backing this money at all? Or, when he loses the appeal, is the state of New York going to be left holding the bag because they had the audacity, the ignorance to trust Donald Trump? You don't trust Donald Trump. There is no time when trusting Donald Trump makes any sense. So now we got a big mess. Did he actually post a bond or did he not? So far, it looks like he hasn't. Now, earlier today, the New York Attorney General filed a motion seeking more information about Trump's $175 million bond in their case. But they're also apparently going at the issue sideways as well through a letter sent to Judge Arthur Engoron. Specifically, the letter asked Engoron to modify his post-trial order concerning the powers and duties of the independent monitor in two ways. One of the AG's requests is that Engoron clarify that the monitor can communicate with any of the parties ex parte, meaning without all sides present. What makes this so significant, Rubin noted, is that the monitor, retired federal judge Barbara Jones, has information about the bond that's not yet public. Now, given that provision, the AG's team could be hedging its bets. Either they'll get information on how the bond is collateralized through their motion for justification of the surety, or if Engoron expands the monitor's ability to speak either to either party ex parte, they can just ask her for it. Trump is on the hook for $450 million, and it's growing with interest every day. The interest has not stopped. A state appellate court lowered the bond, of course, to post at $175 million, after which he managed to get the bond from this clown, Don Hankey, who at best is sketchy. Don Hankey is a sketchy motherfucker. There's a lot of weird things about Don Hankey. He's tied to a shell company that's tied to a bank in the Caribbean. He says he doesn't know Donald Trump, but he was part and parcel to some loans to the Trump Tower and another New York building in the hundreds of millions of dollars. So it's not like he doesn't know this clown. Donald Trump knows Don Hankey. And the thing about it is, it shows you how desperate he is. Because the first bond came from Chubb. Now, there are some problems with Chubb, but at least they're a legitimate insurance company who has the money to do the $91 million bond, which they did. But then when the bond became $454 and then they had it lowered to $175, he was having trouble finding anybody to give him a bond, largely due to the fact that he probably doesn't have much collateral left and he's a poor risk. He doesn't pay his bills. So then in the last minute, out of the blue, this Don Hankey shows up and says, I'll take care of it for you. Even though he says he doesn't know Donald Trump, he is clearly part of the cult. So he posts this bond, and when he posts the bond, he fucks up. He forgets some things, like financial statements, which is weird because that'd be the one thing that you absolutely need when you're posting a bond. But you have to give him a little sway because Don Hankey had never posted a bond in New York before. This was a totally new situation, and he was limited on time to get it done. I still don't know why he did it, because when he finally did turn over his financial statement, said he was had income or money of $535 million, and that $175 million represents more than 30%. Which is a little beyond what the state of New York will allow when somebody's posting a bond. This is a surety, and they have to make sure that when he loses the appeal, that the money will be there. And this company is supposed to be trusted to do that. Well, how do you trust a motherfucker that has a bank in the Caribbean that's known to be slimy as hell, that's trying to help Donald Trump by doing something half-ass or sideways to get it done? they get caught. So now what happens? Well, we don't know exactly what happens, but if we find out this guy isn't a legitimate surety, then he doesn't have a bond. Donald Trump doesn't have a bond. He better find another company to provide the bond, and they better be legit. If he can't find anybody else to post the bond, well, then presumably Letitia James can get down to business, do some shopping, seize some properties, and liquidate those motherfuckers. That's really all that's left. The criteria for holding Letitia James back from liquidating his properties is if he posts the bond. And at this moment, he hasn't posted the bond, and now they're going to have to figure out if it's even a legitimate posting. So there's a lot of trouble for Donnie Trump in this situation, and we'll have to wait and see what the fuck happens. All right, we are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. On every show, I tell you that if you have questions, comments, or complaints, just reach out to me at rationalboomer@gmail.com. Those emails come directly to me, and your input is crucial to this show. The show is called Rational Boomer Podcast, but that's not to suggest that I'm the Rational Boomer. I am not. I am simply a Rational Boomer. All of you are Rational Boomers. Anybody of a like mind is a Rational Boomer. Strength comes in numbers and not through an individual. You have perceptions and insights that may have never occurred to me. This isn't a show about me. This is a show about us and gaining a voice in this country. There's 70 million baby boomers in this country. Yeah, I know the younger folks would prefer to push us aside. Every generation has done that. But we are a formidable force if we can get together and speak in one voice. This is why I encourage you to let your friends and family know about the Rational Boomer Podcast, not to satisfy my ego, but to give us more power, a stronger voice, to help right this ship we call the United States of America. Lastly, I'm offering the opportunity for my listeners to be on the show. Now, it could be 2 minutes, it could be a half hour, it could be the whole fucking show. I'd much rather have you on the show than somebody pimping a podcast or a book. I want to hear what you think. I want to know what you know. The Rational Boomer Podcast is all about us.
All right. We know that with regards to the January 6th trial in D.C., the only person to be indicted is Donald Trump. We know there are a lot of other people involved, sitting members of Congress, Jenny Thomas, Roger Stone, any number of other folks, but they have not been indicted as yet. And the reason they haven't indicted them yet is because, well, they want to focus on Donald Trump. Time is of the essence, and anytime they bring more people into this whole mess, it's going to cause delays, and they don't want any more delays than they already have. So the question is, are they going to have some superseding indictments where these sitting members of Congress that were clearly involved in this case on January 6th and the fake electors type thing, are they ever going to be indicted? Well, the only information I've heard about that is that the plan is that they are going to indict people, but they're not going to do it till after the election to make it less complex. And I get that. You know, I'd rather have them do it today, but fact of the matter is you have to do what you have to do. And at this point, my biggest concern is Donald Trump, and apparently the biggest concern with Jack Smith is Donald Trump. So we have to trust that what he's doing is correct. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean we have to wait until after the November election to see sitting members of Congress get indicted. This is a good one. Two members of Congress with close ties to former President Donald Trump have received subpoenas from Arizona investigators with questions about efforts to overturn the state's 2020 election, according to a new report. Those two representatives are Andy Biggs and Paul Gosar, two very special pieces of shit and certainly big-time Trump humpers, and were involved in the fake elector scheme. They have been ordered to testify in front of a grand jury as Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays, a Democrat, leads a probe into the historic events that followed the November 2020 election. Now, Mays appears to be nearing a decision on whether to ask the grand jury to issue indictments in the case. Now, there have been no comments from Gosar or Biggs. Oh, big surprise. I'm sure they're shitting their pants right now.
Both men vocally supported Trump's efforts to overturn Biden's Arizona victory and attend a White House strategy meeting with Trump ahead of the riot. Now, the report also notes that May's decision is not one commonly made. This is unusual. Subpoenas to members of Congress in criminal investigations are rare, in part because lawmakers enjoy robust constitutional protections from criminal proceedings connected to their official business. The subpoenas were sent out as May's mulls potential criminal charges linked to efforts to overturn President Joe Biden's victory in a key swing state. Now, keep in mind, Donald Trump could get indicted here, too. He could be part of this whole mess. There could be sitting members of Congress, Jenny Thomas, Roger Stone, anybody else could be possibly indicted here if they take it to that extent. Now, last month, Woodruff, Swan, and Cheney reported it remains unclear to the full extent of those charges or if they will ever be filed. It's not guaranteed that they're going to file charges. They're doing an investigation, and they need to talk to a couple of those fucks that were involved, Gosar and Biggs. Now, news broke in August that May's office would investigate the Trump campaign's post-election actions in Arizona, one of the seven lost states Trump tried to reclaim with slates of electors. Similar efforts in Georgia spurred Fulton County District Attorney Fani Willis to charge Trump and more than a dozen others in election racketeering. You see, that's what we're looking at. What we're seeing in Georgia right now could be replicated in Arizona, could be replicated in Michigan, for that matter, and in many other places. So that's why I've always said we're not necessarily done with indictments for Donald Trump. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in Arizona. I would bet that Gosar and Biggs are on the short list for indictments. There is some difficult parts of this because, as they said, when you're a member of Congress, you get special treatment, in spite of the fact they're the ones that tell us that no one is above the law. Well, that is unless you've got money, you've got power, you've got position. Oh, and you're white. If you got all that stuff, you might get treated differently. No, in fact, you're definitely getting treated differently. Now, a couple of days ago, I was in the first part of the program, I was coughing a lot. I've pretty much gotten over a cold, but I got a dry throat. And when you sit here and talk continually, as I do, it creates a cough. And I'm going to cough from time to time. Somebody came onto the page, I think on YouTube, and said, "Hey, listen, man, why don't you just relax and rest if you're sick and then come back when you're not sick?" And I appreciate the interest and the concern, but I'll tell you this. I would do that. I would take a few days off from doing the podcast and doing TikToks to get over this cold if I was a fucking pussy. And I'm not a fucking pussy. So I'm sorry if you're bothered by me coughing, but you're going to have to fucking deal with it. It's getting better every day. It will get better. It will go away and we'll be fine. I don't feel sick. I'm not in a bad way. So just let me do my fucking job. All right. Well, we had an interesting story. Actually, a story I predicted. You remember back a ways when this upstart political party, No Labels, said, "We're going to have a third party candidate." And all the Democrats would come to my page. "Oh my God, this is horrible. This is Armageddon. They're going to steal votes from Joe Biden. It's over now. Donald Trump will win." And I said, "Nah, that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. They won't have enough money. And they don't even have a fucking candidate at that point. How can you be fearful of a third-party candidate from a party who doesn't have a candidate? That's crazy. Stop it." Well, today, No Labels has dropped plans to pursue a 2024 presidential ticket, according to the New York Times. And you know what the reason is? They got no fucking candidate. Just like I told you in the beginning, you got to have a candidate to run somebody, and nobody is stupid enough to stick their name on the ballot for the no labels party. You know what's funny about the No Labels Party? They tried to act as if they're above it all. We're not Democrats. We're not Republicans. We're kind of in the middle. We're for the people. Yeah. But you know who their biggest biggest supporter financially was? Fucking RNC. They gave him like $70 million. Jesus Christ. But it's so typical of the Republicans. Try to come in the side door. Try to fund these people to take votes away from Joe Biden because they knew Donald Trump can't win it in his own right. So they're trying to game the situation any way they can. But the joke's on Republicans because the No Labels Party isn't going to have a candidate, and you wasted $70 million at a time when you are desperate for fucking money. Now, leader Nancy Jacobson told the Times Thursday the centrist group was unable to woo a candidate despite raising $70 million last year to run a bipartisan ticket. It's hardly bipartisan. It's Republican. You can say that, but nobody buys it. And are you surprised nobody was willing? I mean, they could come to anybody and say, hey, do you want to run for president on the No Labels ticket? They couldn't find anybody. Nobody. So all you folks that were worried about the No Labels Party and a third party candidate come November, stop worrying. It's not going to happen. Now, when they asked all these people, there was a long string of no thank yous from prominent Republicans and Democrats, and it spoiled No Labels plans, which I predicted. Today, No Labels is ending our effort to put forth a unity ticket in the 2024 presidential election. It was never going to be a unity ticket. It was there simply to try to game the election and take votes away from Joe Biden. Americans remain more open to an independent presidential run and hungrier for unifying national leadership than ever before. But No Labels has always said we would only offer our ballot line to a ticket if we could identify candidates with a credible path to winning the White House. No such candidates emerged, so the responsible course of action is for us to stand down. Now, last month, former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie requested his name be scratched from the list of potentials that No Labels hoped to formalize ahead of the November 5th election. Christie said, I appreciate the encouragement I've gotten to pursue a third-party candidate. While I believe this is a conversation that needs to be had with the American people, I also believe that there is not a pathway to win if my candidacy in any way, shape, or form would help Donald Trump become president again, and then it's not the way forward. No Labels plan to run an independent candidate against Donald Trump and President Joe Biden in November had been widely criticized by Democratic supporters for giving the Republicans an advantage. And that's exactly what was happening. That's exactly what the intention was. So, No Labels is no more. No Labels in November will be a no-show, just as I suspected. Now, we've got a lot of people worried about RFK Jr. RFK Jr., as a third-party candidate, is taking a beating. He's being exposed for all the crazy shit he's said over the years. His family has come out and said he'd be an embarrassment if he runs for president. He really aligns more with the Republicans than he does the Democrat as an anti-vaxxer and a conspiracy theorist. So I don't honestly believe he's going to take votes or as many votes away from Joe Biden as he would the Republicans. Again, here's another guy I don't think you have to worry about. People throw these names up in the air. Oh, my God, what happens if? I'm so worried. Time to stop fucking worrying. RFK Jr. isn't a serious candidate. He isn't a serious politician. He's a fucking goofball, and his family says that. All right. Fulton County Superior Court Judge Scott McAfee rejected the motion by former President Donald Trump to dismiss the Georgia election suburban case against him on Thursday. Donald Trump is scrambling. He is trying everything. He's trying to get out of the Manhattan District case to no avail. That looks like that's pretty solid. That's going to happen on April 15th. We know that Fannie Willis wants to start the Georgia case in August, and he's trying to find a way out there, but to no avail. Trump and his legal team tried to argue that the alleged efforts to overturn the 2020 election were covered under the First Amendment. Oh, yeah, we've heard that before, and nobody is buying that. Now, CNN reported that McAfee wrote, "The defense has not presented, nor is the court able to find any authority that the speech and conduct alleged is protected political speech." And that is the right answer. Now, CNN's Sarah Murray, Jason Morris, and Zachary Cohen also reported that this latest development on Trump's legal saga puts the former president one step closer to his RICO trial, though McAfee declined to set a date in the latest court order. Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis has stated that she's prepared to go to trial in August. Now, last month, McAfee dismissed six charges in the RICO case against Trump and some of his co-defendants and three of the charges against Trump, bringing the number of criminal charges against him down from 91 to 88. McAfee stated that the allegations that the defendants tried to get GA officials to violate their oaths were not detailed enough. Trump pleaded not guilty to all charges, of course, following the indictment. Now, those other charges that were dropped, if Fannie Willis chooses to, she can get together the information that would solidify these charges again. I don't know that she will. With 88 felony charges, it really doesn't matter at this point. Him canceling those charges, not really a huge deal, because we know that Donald Trump only really needs to be convicted of a couple of charges, and he's fucking done. Long as the important ones are there, that's all that really matters at this point. All right. A legal panel made a preliminary determination that former Department of Justice official Jeffrey Clark violated rules of professional conduct and should be professionally disciplined after hearing on his efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Now, in the waning days before the January 6, 2021 incident, Clark, then serving as acting assistant attorney general for the civil division at DOJ, sought to be appointed as acting attorney general in order to carry out Trump's orders to open investigations into false claims of voter fraud. Some people say he was even the actual acting attorney general for minutes or a couple of hours. But then when everybody in the DOJ says, you do this, motherfucker, we're all quitting. A mass resignation. They thought better of it, and they didn't make him the attorney general. Now, the recommendation of professional discipline followed multiple days of testimony about Clark's efforts on behalf of Trump to overturn the 2020 election. A three-member committee of the District of Columbia Board on Professional Responsibility, which oversees ethics case for lawyers, barred in the city. Now, the committee's ruling is a preliminary finding that Clark violated at least one ethics rule for lawyers barred in the district. The next step in the disciplinary process is the issuance of a sanction letter proposing punishment. The full D.C. Board on Professional Responsibility, as well as a D.C. Appeals Court, must then approve that letter for the punishment to be finalized. Now, Clark could end up being disbarred or the suspension of his legal license. The investigators prosecuting the case against him have advocated for his disbarment. This isn't the only legal trouble that Clark faces on his role in January 6th. Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis has included him in the RICO charges. So even if he does keep his law license, he'll probably lose it once he's convicted of a felony. Of course, he pleaded not guilty to those charges in September, but it doesn't matter. He's guilty as fuck, and he will be going to jail. He doesn't have enough power. He doesn't have enough sway to get out of this one. It's pretty clear that he's guilty, and being part of the RICO case does not bode well for this dipshit. And to be perfectly honest with you, when we were talking about the superseding indictments for those people involved in January 6th, I got a feeling his name is going to be one of those that are indicted when they come out, presumably after the election. All right, there's some fucked up shit going on down in Florida. And I think Jack Smith may be finally at the point where he's had a fucking enough. Special Counsel Jack Smith's angry filing accusing Judge Aileen Cannon of slow-walking rulings in the Mar-a-Lago classified documents case appeared to have a partial effect, with the right-wing judge moving on Thursday to deny former President Donald Trump's Presidential Records Act. Defense has grounds to dismiss the case, but she reserved the right to adopt Trump's overbroad view of the law at trial, still refusing to issue a final ruling on the matter. And where the problem with that is that she says it's not good now for pretrial, but once we're in the case, it may be different. Problem with that is, and I'm sure she knows this, is that once the trial started and the jury is seated, then Jack Smith can't appeal it. She could essentially dismiss the case in the middle of the case, and there's nothing Jack Smith could do about it because of double jeopardy. So Jack Smith is watching his P's and Q's to make sure that doesn't happen. That's a hell of a scam. Now, Smith has dropped subtle threats he could go to the 11th Circuit to force her to do so, but he actually has another option. Former federal prosecutor Mary McCord told Chris Hayes on MSNBC. Hayes asked, what are Jack Smith's option given the order and also the tone of Aileen Cannon today? McCord said, that's the $65,000 question, and this has been so unique to Judge Cannon all along. She issues rulings that aren't really complete or definitive rulings, or what we call final orders that are appealable, and that's what she's done here. She said, right now, at this point, based on the indictment, the PRA does not provide a reason to dismiss, leaving open what we've been talking about. So she's dancing around this. She's playing a game to try to cover her ass so she doesn't get recused. McCord said, right now, there's not a final order for a traditional appeal. There is the prospect of seeking a writ of mandamus. And to do that, what you're doing is you're going to have to go to the Court of Appeals like you would on appeal, but you don't have a final order to appeal. And you're saying the judge made clear and indisputable error. Here, it would be not addressing the legal question that Jack Smith asked her to address, that there is no other alternative to obtain appeal, and that this order would be appropriate. Now, McCord added, I think there's another option before going for a writ of mandamus. If I were Jack Smith, I would be thinking about filing a motion of lamine, I think it's called, which is Latin for at the threshold. It means a preliminary motion that usually is filed to seek to preclude the admissions of evidence or argument at the trial. It's ruled on before the trial so the jury won't be prejudiced by the evidence that is introduced or argument. And there's an obligation under the federal rules of criminal procedures for a judge to rule on pretrial motions, where the failure to rule would preclude appellate review. Now, if Jack Smith were to file a pretrial motion like that, a motion, and she refused to rule on it or ruled against him, he could at that point seek the mandamus. That's a theory I'm thinking that might avoid some of the problems with there not being a final order. One of the things I think Andrew Weissman suggested is, if this is how she feels about it, ask her straight out, let's just take the Presidential Records Act off the table. It can't be included in the case when the case comes up. Now, that's a problem. That kind of sticks her in the eye in trying to play this game she's trying to play. She will either say yes or no. If she says yes, it can continue. But if she says no, then he can make the appeal. So there are a couple of options there, and we'll see what happens. I think Jack Smith is a smart enough guy. He knows what he's doing. He might be a little frustrated at this point, but he ain't going to let this bitch go. So what Aileen Cannon did, she denied Donald Trump's motion to dismiss the classified documents case based on the Presidential Records Act. And as I said, if Jack Smith goes and said, well, let's just take it off the board, he can't use the Presidential Records Act and neither can we, which is a gutsy thing to do, because as much as Donald Trump says the Presidential Records Act tells him he can do all the things he did, that's not true. In fact, it says the very opposite of that, and is right in line with what Jack Smith has to do with his case against Donald Trump. Now, Aileen Cannon, she talks in circles. She's playing a game here. In her Thursday order, Cannon cast Smith's request as outlandish and deeming it unprecedented and unjust, which is just not true. That's not legal at all. That might be a fair characterization had he made it out of thin air, but he made it in response to her strange previous order in which she requested proposed jury instructions rooted in what might call unprecedented and unjust legal view. So without that context of how we arrived at this point, the judge's characterization is misleading. Now, Cannon ended her order by saying, as always, any party remains free to avail itself of whatever appellate options it sees fit to invoke as permitted by law. But without a ruling on the jury instructions, it's unclear what, if anything, Smith will do about it right now. He may decide to take the win, such as is, and live to fight another day. That's possible, I suppose. The whole episode foreshadows what will undoubtedly be fights to come. Yeah, there's going to be some fights. And while Aileen Cannon seems to be good at dancing around and trying to play the game, she's still incompetent. She's still not a very smart woman, and she's obviously clearly biased. I think when he finally goes to the 11th Circuit, she is going to get fucking hammered. Now, we've talked about this before, and I wanted to bring it up again because we've got a perspective from somebody who would know. It's about Donald Trump's Truth Social stock. This thing has been an absolute mess. Donald Trump issued his IPO. It went great guns at first, but then word came out that he lost $58 million in a year. They only had $4 million of revenue. This is not a healthy company and is not something that anybody should invest in. And there's a gentleman who's the chairman of Expedia and IAC. He said, Trump Media, his name is Barry Diller, Trump Media is a scam and people buying its high-flying stocks are dopes. He said that in a scathing takedown on the social media company whose majority shareholder is former President Donald Trump. What he's suggesting is that Donald Trump has all these billions of dollars, but it's all smoke and mirrors and it won't last. Oh, big fucking surprise. Diller went on to say, I mean, it's ridiculous. When asked about Trump Media, the company has no revenue. It's a scam, just like everything he's been involved in some sort of con. A Trump Media spokesman, in response to Diller's comment, said, it's unsurprising to see Trump diehard Trump haters and left-wing flacks blow a gasket now that Truth Social has become a public company that still today refuses to suppress political expressions that contradicts the narratives that they want to enforce. You didn't bother to mention the fact that you have less than a million users, which is lame at best, and that you lost $58 million, and your stock has dropped like 30 fucking percent. Yeah, hardly strong, hardly solid. Now, CNBC has requested a comment from a spokesman for Trump, who is the presumptive nominee for the Republican Party. When Trump Media began trading last week with the ticker DJT, its share price rocketed up about 50% to close to $80 before settling down. As of Thursday morning, Trump Media shares were selling at $47. That gives the company a whopping $6.4 billion capitalization, despite the fact it had just $4.1 million in revenue last year, and its business is focused on Truth Social's app. Now, Trump media on Monday reported it had net losses of $58 million in 2023. He compared the price run-up of Trump media to the meme stock frenzy in 2021 when the price of GameStop soared to nearly $500 per share and AMC Entertainment, a movie theater company, saw its share price skyrocket to more than $700. GameStop shares were selling for less than $12 per share in early trading Thursday morning, and AMC shares for just more than $3. So you can see where Truth Social is headed. Diller said, I think they're dopes when they ask people why they're buying the company's stock. I mean, who would buy a company that literally, what does it have, $30 of revenue? Who could put a value on that, Diller asked. Then buying it for other reasons, just like they bought theaters when there was no theater business or bought GameStop, whatever. It's stupid, stupid stuff. Asked if Trump media could ever become a bigger business than it is now, particularly if Trump is elected president later this year, Diller flatly replied, no, no way. Look, he's only interesting now because he's out of the entertainment, folks, Diller said. I hope he gets elected. He just plays golf for 4 years. All right, we were mentioning that Judge McAfee denied Donald Trump's request for dismissal of the case, and apparently some of the hardcore supporters not feeling it. Donald Trump's hardcore supporters did not take it well on Thursday when Judge Scott McAfee issued a 14-page ruling reaffirming the former president should stand trial on RICO charges for attempted 2020 election interference after his lawyers asked for yet another dismissal of the charges. Attorneys for Trump maintains the charges should be dismissed on First Amendment grounds, which McAfee dismissed out of hand by writing, although the First Amendment is a broad umbrella that shelters all political points of view and shields a wide range of avenues for expression, free speech, including political speech, is not without restriction. That in turn led to accusations on X that McAfee is corrupt, accompanied by threats of violence to come if the former president is convicted. Oh, big surprise. Commentator Michaela Darwin wrote, look at the judge's body language. Anyone can see that the judge hates Trump's guts or that the judge has taken some sort of bribe. With Julie B. contributing, Georgia judge is a Fanny fan. Her name's Fani, suggesting McAfee is in full Fulton County District Attorney Fani Wills' pocket. McAfee wants celebrity status. Unfortunately, if President Trump is found guilty, there will be a civil war. No, there will not. There will not be a civil war. And if there is, a lot of Trump motherfuckers are going to get wiped out. Now, the comments went on. If he was a legitimate judge, Fani Willis would have been gone. These judges are jokes. And corrupt Joe, nothing happens to him or his spaced out crooked son, Hunter. And, of course, Hillary has her out of jail card for life. Still hyping on Hillary. This old grandma who is just a private citizen, and they're scared to death of her still. Well, the reason why Joe Biden isn't indicted or getting into problems is because he didn't break a law. There is no evidence and no witnesses to that fact. You guys can keep talking about it. You guys can keep accusing him, but eventually you got to come up with a fucking witness or some evidence. And you've come up short all this time. To compare Joe Biden to Donald Trump is absolutely ridiculous because Donald Trump, in fact, broke laws and there is plenty of evidence and plenty of witnesses. So therein lies the difference between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. All right, we are going to wrap up the Rational Boomer podcast. I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to listen. I hope you have a great day, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Rational Boomer podcast. Don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We'll see you next time.